It's time for one of the great times of the week. Midweek Media Watch, where we check in with a friend, Colin Peacock, who joins us a lot now. Hello, Colin.
You said that without conviction.
No, I meant it.
One of the great times of the week. Honestly, you should have used your big radio voice, then people might have believed it.
You're so sensitive, Colin. Honestly, come on. No, I love our, I love our chats. They're a great time. Let's kick off with a bouquet, Colin, for a good old-fashioned scoop.
Yeah, just when I thought mention something nice for a start, in a way. I was very happy to fork out my money for the old-fashioned print edition of the Herald on Sunday in the weekend, a front page scoop by Jared Savage, who's an expert on crime, gangs, all that sort of stuff. And to me, it showed the value of, you know, having a specialist investigative pro reporter, you know, that might not turn out a story every week or be constantly on the website. But, you know, there it was, Sunday paper, big scoop on the front. So this was about so-called ghost buyers and guns, and two guys in court during the week on this, the charges are basically about the sort of on-selling of weapons, which if, it seems from the story almost certainly will end up in the hands of criminals, and that these two guys had formerly worked for Gun City, the country's largest retailer. All the information there, as well as being a crime story, as we know, crime sells and all of that, but this one was directly relevant and a great piece of work.
What distinguishes, you talked about the importance of having specialist investigative reporters. What distinguishes a really excellent piece of investigative journalism reporting that might take weeks or months or sometimes even years from a really good piece of, you know, breaking news or sort of an everyday news story in your mind?
Yeah, because in one sense, this was a piece of court news, right? These two guys had been in court. But it's the attention to detail. So the weapons themselves, Alpha carbine rifles, people who know guns might know this. I certainly didn't as a regular person reading the paper. That's all I am, Emil. That these were
you're
popular.
More than that, Colin.
Yeah, okay. I'm not a typical reader of the newspaper, but in terms of guns and crime, I don't know any more than the average person. And these guns can be cut down into pistols. They don't eject cartridges. And also, kind of chilling detail, it said that these are suspected of being the weapon used in the Ponsonby Road shooting back in May. That genuinely was shocking. And of course, if they don't eject cartridges when they're chopped down to these revolver size, that doesn't leave incriminating evidence. So, yeah, and handguns completely illegal in this country, right? Except for certain weapons used on a range and shooting competition weapons, stuff like that. But it was also the involvement of Gun City, its maverick owner David Tipple, who's now got quite a cuttings file, if we could put it like that. And you know, the proposed importer of these weapons is Gun City, nearly half of all the weapons sold of that type in the country through them. It's interesting, my paper edition ends with a kind of historic quote. I've got it right here. I can rustle the paper for atmospheric effect. Previous quote from David Tipple saying he questioned whether blocking the imports of these Alpha carbines would improve public safety. He said there was no way to reliably protect the public by removing something that might be used as a weapon. And then the online version of the story adds on from that. In making this point, he cited the use of rocks and pencils in murders, and terrorists driving trucks into crowd and knife crime in London. But like that, to me, is very different from using a weapon that could have been acquired through his retail outlets, which, you know, can be chopped down to this concealed size and are designed in doing so not to leave evidence behind. That's very different from someone using a rock or a pencil to kill someone else in some sort of other circumstance, I would have said. And of course, all this highly, highly relevant, because right now the Associate Justice Minister, Nicole McKee, is in charge of a potential reform of the gun laws. So, you know, this is this issue of these weapons has been brought to her attention by police in the course of this this process.
And some serendipitous timing, because Nicole McKee, that piece was in the Herald on Sunday, and Nicole McKee was on TVNZ's political programme Q&A on Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's right. So those ordinary media people like me that just read the paper, watch the odd bit of telly, you know, could have seen both those things on a Sunday morning. So that issue of straw buying was raised by Jack Tame, and, you know, as is typical of that program, the long form interview, the minister in the chair, and Jack Tame having done lots of research, and that's the only place you'll see interviews like that on television anymore. Increasingly, radio doesn't really offer that same scope for a great number of those sorts of interviews as well. So, she said it was only something like 6% of firearms that got diverted in this way. Jack Tame had other evidence about what they call retail diversion. That was interesting. I'll play you a bit just to give you a flavour. This is about halfway through the chat between Jack Tame and Nicole McKee.
Yeah. Let me ask this. Did you read the Royal Commission?
The Royal Commission Inquiry?
Into March 15?
Yes.
Yeah, so that line, quote, "The looseness of controls on semi-automatic firearms has been appreciated for decades, and the risk that a terrorist could take advantage of this was identified. Yeah. But there was no significant tightening of the regime, largely because of strong opposition from the firearms community." Well, how did you feel when you read that?
Well, I look at what's been said over the last few years, and I think that we've had ample opportunity to be able to tighten up the regime. When we look at the inquiry that took place, the inquiry was on the illegal possession of firearms. The advice that was given is not as a lobbyist, it was as a firearm safety educator.
Yeah, that's a really interesting response. Yeah. Only advising the government as a safety educator, not as a lobbyist for COLFO. And again, sort of showing the value of doing research, I suppose. At the start of that interview, Jack Tame had played a clip of Nicole McKee doing her maiden speech in Parliament, and she was wearing a korowai and said, "This korowai was given to me by COLFO, the Council of Licensed Firearm Operators," I think it is, the group
firearm owners,
for which, owners, beg your pardon, for which she was the representative, saying, "I feel the weight of their expectations on me." The loopholes she talked about, a lot of the interview was spent in that, the Category A and E weapons, and the high-capacity magazines. So in a sense, they were talking a little bit at cross-purposes, and you would have to follow it quite closely. But they stuck to the task in that interview of getting the details. But yeah, that issue of, you know, handling this issue, having a background as a firearms lobbyist, and as Amelia Wade of Stuff has reported in recent days, also having this company for which she was offering this advice, firearm safety specialists, I think it's called, not registered as a pecuniary interest, registered as a pecuniary interest, but not in the conflict of interest register. You know, all this is, you know, detail that's pretty interesting. It's good the media is bringing it to light if gun law reform is, you know, in play.
Entirely relevant, yeah. It was a robust interview. Was there much response to it?
Yeah, some. There was, for example, just today, they discussed it on News Talk ZB and on The Drive show. David Farrer, the commentator and pollster, was asked, "Do you think it's a problem that she was a lobbyist?" And he went, "Oh, no, not really, because other people are, can be teachers, union people, and end up being the Minister of Education, or teachers, like, say, Jan Tinetti was a principal, I think. So things like that can happen." And Jack Tame himself was a guest on the spot they call the huddle, where they talk about the day's news. You know, he was the other pundit. So Jack Tame himself said, "Yeah, it's about the process here, though, isn't it?" And I don't know if it is about the process. I mean, for me, it's, you know, no one ever presented at hospital with injuries from, a tweak in the education curriculum. You know, this is a life and death stuff. So it's interesting. So I think good that the media is putting a spotlight on it. But another interview, Nicole McKee turned up on the platform. And I think when I was looking for this interview, this is on Leah Panapa's afternoon show, and she introduced it as saying she was highly offended by Jack Tame's egregious, she called it, stance in this interview. He tried to portray Nicole McKee as responsible for the March 15, 2019 massacre because in the interview they pursue this thing as to whether the loophole could have been closed if she hadn't been giving the government the advice she had at the time. So quite a lot in that. The interview went on for some time. Nicole McKee said it's great to have a grown-up conversation about this, and it really wasn't. It was just Leah Panapa griping about Jack Tame, largely. And she even encouraged her callers to complain to the BSA, Broadcasting Standards Authority, about it. And actually, in doing so, here's one. She's giving advice to a caller called Ray.
"I think he was skirting around defamation."
Yeah. Well, enough people complain about it, Ray, and something gets done. Squeaky wheel and all that stuff. Just lodge it, you know? Things.
Yeah,
can,
I'm going to.
Things
I've
can
never
happen.
Done it before.
Well, me neither, and I did.
Oh, yeah.
Good on you, Ray. Cheers for the call, my love.
So us two it. Karens. Us two Karens will get together.
Us two Karens.
So I don't know whether she literally means that she is complaining herself, but I mean, a silly thing to say, really, as a former radio broadcaster, say, look, it's the squeaky wheel that gets the attention. Mm-hmm. Enough people complain, they'll do something. They won't. The Broadcasting Standards Authority will look at the standards, the codes, and no matter how many people complain, we'll apply those to the interview. And I don't think any formal complaint about that interview would be upheld for any reason.
Let's turn, Colin, to the fallout from the Olympics. And I am curious, does Media Watch have a view on Reagan, the breakdancer?
Not really. I mean, so much has been said, so much by people with grudges about this. I didn't really necessarily want to add to it. It doesn't seem to me like anyone who really knew much about breaking or breakdancing, and that includes me, would know what to say or have any sensible opinion. I thought, though, there was a welcome dose of perspective on this from Australia itself, which is obviously the ground zero of all. This is from a podcast we both know well, Second Captains.
Great podcast.
Yep. And they spoke to a guy called Rowan Connolly, who's now, I think, against his will, being dubbed Ro-Gun. But he does a podcast that's all about actually AFL, Aussie Rules Football, so uh-huh. Nothing to do with it. But he's just a wide voice about sports. And they talked about how some of the meme stuff had been funny, just people laughing along with the story. But, you know, obviously so much of the pile-on at Rachel Gunn was just personal, and she herself had called it devastating when she spoke on social media. But what Rowan's point was about the media, saying he just showed, in his mind, it showed the kind of falling standards and degradation of Australia's media.
I mean, some of the people that write opinion in major media organisations now are people who 30 years ago wouldn't have been let through the front door, seriously. That's how far standards have slipped.
And then he followed up with another comment where he said, look, of all the people commenting on this in Australia and joining the pile on, you know, for the engagement, not really having sincere points of view, he said you could absolutely predict, if you line them up on a sheet of paper, give them the names, you could absolutely predict what they were going to say.
A considerable majority of people who are arguing quite objectionable things in mainstream media forums don't actually believe what they're saying, but they know their audience will lap it up. Mm. And it's sort of like the last desperate attempt of those organisations to hang on to what audience they have.
I think that's a really good point, eh? Yeah. It's not all that profound, what he's saying, but, you know, I thought he perfectly expressed that. This is like, oh, there's noise on social media. You know, how can we hang off the back of that and get a bit of engagement? And, it's pretty desperate. And that only served to just ramp it up, and that's really unfortunate for the individual right at the centre of it.
I mean, we were talking on Nights last week briefly about Reagan. I can't quite remember the context of it, but someone sent me a text saying, why are people being so mean about Reagan when everyone seemed to delight in? Do you remember the 2000 Olympics? There was an athlete at the 2000 Olympics, the Sydney Olympics, called Eric Musambani, Eric the Eel. Mm. He was a swimmer from Equatorial Guinea, and he competed in, I think, the 100-metre freestyle, and he barely completed the race.
Yeah.
It took him well over a minute. And that did kind of make me wonder about this. But I feel like there is kind of a difference in that Eric was kind of competing against all the odds, you know. He was from Equatorial Guinea. He'd never seen a 50-metre pool before. He had to practice in a lake and stuff like that. Whereas with Reagan, quite apart from the unproven allegations around the selection process there, I've seen some video of top Australian breakdancers, and they're a lot better than her. And perhaps it's that, the suspicion that she wasn't actually there on merit. Take your point around the some of the commentary really veering into really miserable culture war, point scoring. But also, I thought some of the commentary as well, saying this is the spirit of the Olympics, good on her for giving it a go, also veered into kind of paternalistic territory.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, all that is just culture war stuff. You're talking about the media aspect of it. To me, it is just that it's all amplified, just everybody wants to have a say because they know they can rack people up about it. I mean, not many people cared about Eric the Eel. That was a bit of a novelty. You know, Eddie the Eagle, I mean, that was even more crazy, because he would have denied people opportunities to participate in the Winter Olympics when he didn't know what he was. But people loved that too. That was, I think, mostly pre-internet. And maybe that's the difference. But it's just so miserable. I just can't understand why media organisations would want to bother, other than, I mean, they only get a short hit of engagement
out
of it. And it is the fact that it's probably Australia, right? They have this intense sporting culture. In fact, Rohan Connolly, that guy, Rogan, is now nicknamed, he was saying at the start of the interview, when asked how come Australia did so well at the Olympic Games, you know, before they started discussing the ray gun thing. Uh-huh. And he said, I think, you know, don't want to say this out loud, but I think it's generally, we're so low on culture in this country. The climate's good. So we just, you know, we spend too much time thinking about and doing sport. That's it. You know, so I'd rather we were better poets as well and had fewer sports. It was quite funny to hear a guy whose career is based on being a sports broadcaster and podcaster say that. And he just, I guess he would have said that to like an Irish audience rather than an Australian one, but kind of funny. But yeah, it probably has a lot to do with the intensity of sport and culture. So anyone who wants to chuck their two cents in, and that includes mainstream media, trying to get clicks and engagement, would know that with that backdrop, they could pump up the outrage.
Well, I mean, a savvy talkback radio station in Australia could get some ratings gold by giving Reagan a show, potentially. This is how things work, right?
Nah, she should take control of it, just run her own thing on her own social accounts, just keep the media. Don't go on I'm a Celebrity, Treasure Island, Get Me Out of Here, or whatever it's called. Don't do that. Just be yourself, and if you want to talk about it in your own terms. I would say all the stuff about endorsements and all that, I don't really think that's likely to be true. I don't think she's going to make a stack off it, because I just think people would have moved on by next week. But also the victim of this would be, wouldn't it, breaking culture, breakdancing, hip hop. I don't know anything about it. Plenty of people do. They probably don't get much of a gateway into the mainstream media because, you know, that's not mainstream media's constituency. So in the end, they're probably the main victims of it. They're a culture that's been misrepresented, misunderstood, and, you know, might be chucked out of the Olympics for no good reason.
Let's talk jobs because, speaking of the Australian media, Rupert Murdoch's News Corp has a new recruit from Aotearoa, New Zealand.
Yeah, that's right. They need new people to bash up breakdancing and get more cultural outrage into their news. No, just kidding. Stuff chief executive here, Laura Maxwell, has gone to Australia to take up a role. She's going to be the Queensland managing director of their state and, well, their community mastheads division. So they're having one in each state. This is part of a restructure of News Corp. That's Rupert Murdoch's outfit, criticised by Rohan Connolly there in our previous segment. And they've restructured into three divisions, and she's going to take over one. So, she is gone as the leader of Stuff in this country.
After taking over as chief executive Stuff not that long ago.
Yeah, it was just over a year ago, I think, that they launched a sort of new executive layer, new executives after, you know, because the chief executive the owner at that point, was Sinead Boucher.
I was there when that happened, that handover.
Oh, yeah, of course you were. Yeah, that's right. So they were presented, unless I'm very much mistaken, as the next generation leadership. And that clearly is a bit of a hiccup in that plan if one of those key execs is leaving after only a year or so. Tim Murphy, former Herald owner, newsroom co-editor on social platforms, noted that exiting the words from Sinead Boucher, the owner, in farewelling her weren't exactly all that warm. They were quite formal, so I don't know what to read into that, though.
And in terms of that chief executive staff position, Sinead Boucher stepping back in there for the time being, interim chief executive, I think?
I think that's what they're calling it, but that's the job she had before they did that executive. She was, you know, the editor-in-chief and in charge and so on. But they have others, like, for example, Joanna Norris is one of those four executives, and she was formerly editor of the press. She went into PR, came back again at Stuff, and there are others. So I think the interesting thing will be is if they appoint someone from that, who was part of the old Stuff, you know, when driven by newspaper publishing and newsroom operations and stuff, someone like her, or whether it's someone more from the digital and marketing and product a modern digital multimedia company.
And speaking of Stuff hires, Patrick Gower, who was on 9 to Noon just not so long ago, is a new employee at Stuff.
Yep, doing a fortnight filling in for Catherine Ryan on 9 to Noon. And not only him coming in at Stuff, but also producer John Bridges. Together they have a company, so they've been picked up. So that's yet more, you know, people from Three News Hub, the sort of TV-ready talent that's gone from one after the closure of News Hub to the other. And I guess that's further evidence of, you know, what we were talking about there, the fact that that company, once, you know, driven by newspaper news and then online news is now very much into digital media, video, podcasts and all of that. And
John Bridges is a great get.
Yeah, because he's been like innovative. I mean, he's very
not to suggest sorry now. Not to suggest that Paddy's not, but Paddy's skills are well known. John Bridges is that's an excellent hire.
Yeah, but a lot of the attention will be on the front guy, the front man who's well known and a persona and all of that. Yeah, but John Bridges behind the scenes has been producing a lot of stuff from a lot of years, from one-off docos through to producing The Project, which itself was taking a format but making it for New Zealanders and for that TV3 audience. So yeah, that's very much different. So it'd be fascinating to see what they do with the two of them.
The announcement of Patrick Gower's hiring, you had some stuff to say about this, Colin?
Well, not so much. It's just I was surprised that the press release came out and it was riffing on that thing of that old meme of him going, "This is the King News." The kind of the sweary outbursts and the press release, make it 10 swears. Yeah. Well, I think that's quite whiskery now. That's not new. And, maybe it's just not quite the get that they think it is in that sense. And on the Stuff website, they put up a whole bunch of, so-called WTF moments from his career, like the day Don Brash snapped and called him a deceitful bastard. And I don't know, that stuff just seems all a bit old-fashioned to me. He's done lots of stuff since then that's probably resonated with people more, and I don't know, it seems like a bit of a backward step to sort of go back to that old greatest hit stuff for someone who's still very much of the here and now.
I did note, with just about a minute left, Cole, but I did note that the news of Patrick Gower getting a job at Stuff made it to the RNZ 10 PM news bulletin last night, and I was a bit surprised by that, and several texters were a bit surprised as well, one of whom texted in to say, how is journalist gets new job news?
Yeah, look, that I sympathise with that utterly. The same thing happened to me here at RNZ when I was urged to write a story for the web about Hilary Barry moving from TV3 to TVNZ. And I was sort of thinking, well, it's just one big name broadcaster going to the only one that would give her the same sort of profile. So I did kind of write a story which had a headline something like, well-known broadcaster changes employer or something like
right.
that. I think they changed it later on.
Colin Peacock, nice meeting and thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
No worries, and back again in a fortnight or so.
Great stuff. That is Colin Peacock with Midweek Media Watch. And Colin is also, I think, in on Saturday morning.
Yeah, that's right. Well, one more time before they launch the new big Saturday morning live in Christchurch, the Saturday after next.
Once more under the bridge. Great stuff.